This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. In recent years, the state of Wisconsin has faced a cycle of budget deficits. The current deficit is projected at more than $3 billion. Republicans, who have replaced Democrats in the majority, have pledged to end that cycle by right-sizing state government. A La Crosse media panel recently interviewed Republican State Senator Dan Capanke and Democratic State Representative Jennifer Schilling, both of La Crosse, about how the 2011 session might play out. Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Steve Rysom helped set the stage by asking Jennifer Schilling to comment on any lessons to be learned from the dramatic shift in power in Wisconsin from Democratic to Republican control following last November's election.
Well, certainly it is a new landscape down in Madison with the Republicans controlling the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor's office. So there will certainly be a different political philosophy that will be advanced in the Capitol. But I think there are opportunities for us to work together. We have our special session that's been called on jobs. And I think historically in the past, really, economic development has been an area where Democrats and Republicans have been able to work together and advance some proposals. And really, jobs should not be a Democratic or Republican issue, that we all come from communities that need strengthening of the economy, that we need good paying jobs in our region, in our communities, if you come from rural Wisconsin or if you come from a larger city. So certainly jobs are something that we will be working on, but there will be areas that we will have political differences. And I'm concerned that if the new majority starts to reverse and go back on some of the social issues that we really didn't talk about during the campaign, that was just jobs and the economy, and we see them kind of get astray off of the topic of jobs and the issue of jobs, I think that could be troubling. And we've already seen some Assembly Republicans right out of the chute introduce bills that are dealing with ATVs and elevators, and you know, we're just going to see the Indian mascot bill, and some of the social issues too will be coming up. And I think that they get too far off of they're going to overplay their hand and be overreaching.
What did you take away from the election, Dan? And I should mention at this point, you ran opposite Congressman Ron Kind this past November. You came in second. But when it comes to the state of Wisconsin, what you've seen, what do you take away from this?
Well, similar to what Representative Schilling said, and that is, the message was very clear on November 2nd, and that is we want our elected officials to focus on jobs for Wisconsin, the economy here in Wisconsin, and address the deficit that we have in our budget. Those are the issues that I think really dominated the last election, and those are the issues that we take to Madison, and those are the ones that we should concentrate on. There's no question about that. I agree with Representative Schilling that if we get off that road very far, then we have lost, that message. And it's not my intent as a member of the state Senate to lose that message. We will be concentrating on jobs and the economy at least through the budget process, which would be June 30th.
I want to talk quickly about Democratic lawmakers have voiced, let's call it concern, over Republicans hiring a private attorney with taxpayer money to advise them with redistricting. Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald, a Republican, I believe, of Horicon, says that the attorney will only be available to Republicans who are in the majority, and the Democrats attempted to use nonpartisan legislative attorneys, and that was rejected. Dan, I'm going to go with you first, being the Republican. First of all, did I get the details right, and your reaction?
Well, I just heard a little bit about this yesterday, and then I read a little bit about it in the newspaper this morning. And I do understand that the majority Democrats in the Senate last year hired their attorney firm, and there's a bill right now of about $120,000. As I understand it, we were cut out of that last year, and they had the majority. Now we have the majority. I want to emphasize here, as far as the redistricting is concerned, is that this is a process that will play out. It will be a bill. I will have a say when that comes to the floor or in hearings, and as will the other side. So it's supposed to be a fair process. It will be a bill, and we'll go through the normal process as redistricting has in the past.
Jennifer, how about you?
Well, I think this is one example that you know, the public just throws their hands up in the air and say, who's ever in control? It's these partisan games. And this is partisanship at its highest. And, I mean, to use a baseball term that Senator Kopinke would be familiar with, I mean, I would cry foul over this, that this is blatant partisanship, that the Assembly Republicans came into the committee meeting with this motion, didn't even notify the minority members on it so that we had time to have an amendment or just be able to offer something on our side. In the past, as I recall, we allowed the minority party to retain a law firm on and themselves. This example of what happened yesterday with the new Republican majority does not allow Democrats to have Democratic attorneys to represent us at the taxpayers' expense. This is something that taxpayers, Republican or Democrat, are going to be footing the bill for millions and millions of dollars when it comes to expertise in redistricting law. And really, I think it's time that we have a nonpartisan commission. We look at other states that do it, something similar to Iowa, that we have retired judges who would be appointed. We would have some legislative oversight on that. But I mean, this just, we talk about wanting to reform state government. We could start by reforming the redistricting process because it is purely partisan, unfortunately, regardless of who has been in control the last two times that we have done this, and it's ultimately gone to the courts. But I think that this is something that we need to really probably have some outside guidance on and allow some oversight. But I think it's the public would trust it more if we had some judges or a bipartisan, nonpartisan commission redistrict.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the latest session of the Wisconsin Legislature and related matters with two area representatives, Republican State Senator Dan Kopinke and Democratic State Representative Jennifer Schilling. They both represent the La Crosse area. Governor Scott Walker recently released five pieces of legislation that he says will get Wisconsin working. And I'd like to get your quick thoughts. I'll leave it up to the rest of the panel to pursue them individually after this. So, Dan, I'd like to talk with you first on this first one. And legislation requiring plaintiffs to prove damages were caused by a manufacturer's product and protecting retailers from liability for defects caused by manufacturers or distributors. There's more to the proposed bill, but let's leave it at that at this point. I mean, you can elaborate if you want, Dan.
Well, we had similar bills that were passed in the legislature in previous sessions that were vetoed by the governor. We have had information. It stemmed from the lead paint where everybody was guilty. They couldn't pinpoint exactly who manufactured that paint, so it was a broad brush, let's say, and everybody was deemed guilty. So this corrects that. I think it's a message again to manufacturers in Wisconsin that you're going to be treated fairly, and we're open for business.
Jennifer.
Well, I have some concerns. I mean, how this creates jobs here in the state of Wisconsin. this tort reform, you know, really the biggest beneficiaries of a bill would be out-of-state corporations and big insurance companies who, you know, every day common people want to be able to have their voices heard in the courtroom. And these are people who have fallen victim to abuse, negligence, or even death. And by really locking them out of the courtroom process and the judicial process, I think is very unfair. Again, it does not do anything to create jobs. And according to the Pacific Research Institute's 2010 Tort Liability Index, Wisconsin is among the top 10 states with the best climate. So I don't know if this is necessarily an issue that needs to clamor to the first thing right out of the chute when it comes to a jobs package here in the state of Wisconsin. It's a complicated bill with several parts in it. One that draws my concern is the lead paint example that Senator Kopinke had mentioned. And here in western Wisconsin and in La Crosse, we have a lot of homes that are older homes, and lead paint continues to be a public health problem here in the state. And by really clamping down on families' opportunities to pursue some sort of justice, that sends a very harmful message, I think, to folks in that area that are impacted by the example of lead paint and children's health. So I'm just concerned that I don't understand how many jobs it creates as we're moving forward on this topic.
Okay, the second of five proposed pieces of legislation for Governor Walker, a bill to make health savings accounts more affordable by creating a non-refundable tax credit for income deposited in a health savings account.
Again, this is another example of how does this create jobs? I mean, yes, it might make some health care more affordable for some people, but we've seen that health savings account bill come up time and time again. The former Governor Doyle had vetoed that. That has, I think, a fiscal estimate about $35 million, and I don't understand how it's going to be paid for. It has not been indicated how that will be paid for in the state, what cuts will be made to what programs to offset that. I have been in favor of a smaller version of an HSA depending on income eligibility, but this one is just too broad at this time, and it's expensive, and it's not clear how it will be funded.
I think it's long overdue. We've had several HSA bills that have been brought up in previous sessions and have not gotten through the process, and again, it's time for that. It's a piece of the puzzle. I believe we're one of four states that do not have HSAs that are tax deductible right now, and in talking to businesses in the last campaign, it is something that could be offered the employees. I have my own business. I have three full-time employees. I definitely would have HSAs for my employees. I have a good health care program that I provide them, but this would be added to that. I had another business where I did have two employees, and we did have HSAs, and it worked very well for the employees. So I think this is a piece of the puzzle. It's long overdue. I believe we're one of four states that don't have HSAs as tax deductible statewide, so it's time.
This next one, pretty straightforward. Legislation that would require 60 votes in the Assembly, 20 votes in the Senate, to pass any bill that raises taxes.
I think this is something again, both sides can sign on to. We have been known for a high-tax state. We should make it more difficult to look at raising taxes, and there is a provision in there that we can go to a referendum if needed, if we really need that extra those extra dollars. So I'm definitely in favor of this bill. I've signed on as a co-sponsor to it. There are many things that we can do here in Wisconsin by growing our economy, by growing jobs, that will bring more money into the coffers in Madison without raising taxes. So I think that's going to be our emphasis. Without raising taxes, we're going to be bringing jobs here. We're going to grow jobs here. We're going to grow our economy, which in turn will bring more money into the coffers in Madison.
Jennifer? My concern is it really handcuffs future legislatures. And in a time that we may have an emergency here in the state to address something, it is very tough to have that super majority rather than just having that the simple majority. And I understand, you know, talking tax increases is always very difficult, and you need to recognize the economic environment that we're in and the taxing level here in our state. But I think going above and beyond to the supermajority, we've seen states like California who've implemented things like this, and it's been troubling for them and their economy and for their state. And I think, again, this is not one that creates jobs. This is, not something that right out of the chute we can point to a community that says, look, that this is going to benefit a small business, a medium business, or a large business. How does this impact manufacturers? But I think, again, this is kind of off the mark on dealing with jobs and economic development in our state.
If I could follow up,
go ahead, Dan.
Please. In talking to groups of businesses, business people several years ago, I asked them what was the biggest roadblock to bringing new businesses and jobs to Wisconsin. And they said, without question, it was income tax. The state income tax is a barrier to job growth here in the state. And if you look at some of the other states that have lower or no income tax, their economies generally are doing better than ours. So it does grow jobs. It's a clear message to people outside of Wisconsin that we are taking the necessary steps to grow our economy and grow jobs here in this state.
Our next question comes from Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum.
Thank you. Jennifer, you are a member of the Special Committee on Healthcare Reform Implementation. I was just wondering if you could talk about maybe plans for and some possible issues facing healthcare changes within the state.
Yeah, the committee that I'm on, that's a legislative council study committee, so it's kind of a short-term committee. We started our work back in August, and we probably will be concluding in the next month or two, because with the new administration, there might be some differing views about, you know, the people around the table to put together health care reform. But this was something really, it was a public and private member committee that we had legislators and we had hospital administrators and insurance administrators and others that were serving on the committee to talk about how to set up exchanges here in the state of Wisconsin and what states we should model our exchange after and just sort of the governance of it. It's been really interesting that and it's a Herculean task to try to get our arms really about around how and the number of elements from the federal health care reform as they come down to states, what the responsibility will be and how we will implement that and design that here in the state of Wisconsin. So we're going to be wrapping up our work. It's been the committee has been a great experience, but I think after the November election, it became a little more contentious on there just because of the makeup of the committee as far as some of the elected officials and the change in the administration. And there was really some pushback, I think, from some members from wanting to move ahead too quickly because they were concerned that new people will be in charge, that there would be new majorities, a new governor, and not to really overstep any boundaries, but they really wanted to follow the new governor's lead on his idea of the exchanges. And so it's kind of early to tell what Governor Walker will be asking for out of the Department of Health and Human Services with health care reform and designing these exchanges. But that's been a committee I was proud to serve on, and working with our hospitals here about what some of their concerns were, because we are obviously our healthcare system has a tri-state area that we have an impact on. And so wanting to make sure, and my understanding was wanting to make sure whatever kind of exchanges and reforms we have that to allow our healthcare systems that operate in other states to make sure that that would something that would not be hindered as we move forward with reform.
Dan, do you have any thoughts on healthcare?
Yes. I think that, you know, the exchanges that Representative Schilling talked about are something that I've heard from the new DHS secretary that he's looking at, not government-run, but privately run. And I think that this is going to be very helpful for the residents of the state.
Lately, there's been some tension in certain state government offices regarding organization and possible jobs, security. Specifically within the DNR and the Commerce Department. I just wanted to know your thoughts in regards to state government workforce. What do you foresee for the year? Should people be worried? Should they just relax? Dan, we can start with you.
Sure. Well, first off, let me just say that we have a great workforce here, state employees, and for the most part, they do a wonderful job, and we couldn't operate without them. So they're definitely an asset. They make our government run. They provide services to the people, and we need them. On the other hand, when you look at, you know, the situation we're in right now, there's a $3 billion plus budget deficit looming for the next session. There's a $150 million shortfall for this session, which ends June 30th. I mean, we have to make some adjustments. There are no questions about that. Individually, households, businesses have made adjustments, and the government is no different. We're going to have to make some adjustments, too. And so I would just hope that both sides, the administration leaders in the legislature, would come together with our government people, state workers, and come to an agreement that this is the situation we're in. Treat them fairly. Don't ask more of our state employees that we're asking of ourselves as the elected officials, or ask more of what's happening in the private sector.
Jennifer?
I certainly believe there's great angst and concern among state employees, and if it's within commerce or transportation or corrections or within our university system, that there is uncertainty out there as far as what budget cuts would mean. Just today we read that, you know, the governor might be looking at increased privatization within our corrections, and so certainly within our, you know, the idea of privatization of services within these agencies has people concerned. the new Department of Transportation Secretary, Secretary Mark Gottlieb, has been a strong proponent of privatization within our transportation area. So I know, as I have met with transportation engineers when they come to the Capitol, when I see them here in the state building in the district, that they have expressed great concern and cost overruns when we have privatized some of those contracts, and that they end up costing taxpayers more. And some of these, the private engineer firms literally move into a state office. They use the state resources and they use a state email and things like that. And it's they have just have shown example after example of how it has not been in the best interest of taxpayers. So I certainly think that state employees are feeling like they have a big target on their back, and that they are an easy target for some of the fiscal problems that we're in.
And then in regards to transportation, obviously, Governor Walker returned money for the high-speed rail. Just wanted to get both of your thoughts, because there was you know, some talk that this rail could come through La Crosse. Jennifer, you want to start with you?
Yeah, I have described it as a huge missed opportunity for Wisconsin and for Western Wisconsin. As a whole, it would have modernized our transportation system here in Wisconsin. And it's not like the high-speed rail is not going to be built at all. In fact, the plans will go ahead. It will just not come through the state of Wisconsin. It will maybe travel through Illinois, Iowa, and up to the cities. And I think as my children grow up and they look back and they look at the map and they say, why in the world that train not come through Wisconsin? I mean, that people will be wondering that that was a strange route to take, and it's unfortunate that Governor Walker gave that money back, because it would have been huge for jobs. It would have been economic development along that route for many communities, and it really would have modernized our train system here in Wisconsin.
And Dan is vice chair of the Workforce Development, Small Business, and Tourism Committee. I want to know your thoughts, and then maybe if you've talked with other members on what they've been thinking.
I haven't talked to other members at this point about that issue, but I have not been in favor of the high-speed rail based on the financial aspects of the cost and the maintenance. And are we sure that people are going to use it? I'm not sure. I'm not convinced of that. We have Amtrak. We could upgrade Amtrak. We could spend some money. We have that in place already. We could upgrade that, better service. So there are other things that we can do, but we do not have the money, statewide and on national. And so that's why I've been opposed to it. I'm not convinced that it will be utilized to the extent that it pays for itself. And so at this time, with the financial situation that we're facing today and in the coming months, I just think the timing is off, and it's a bad idea right now. So I concurred with the governor.
Wisconsin Republican State Senator Dan Kopanky and Democratic State Representative Jennifer Schilling, our guests on Newsmakers. The La Crosse area politicians are answering questions about the 2011 session of the Wisconsin legislature. Questions in this first part of the conversation from Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum and Steve Rysom. Coming up in part two of the conversation, we'll expand the panel to include Dustin Lukey of WXOW TV 19 and Brad Williams from WIZM Radio. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto.